Welcome to the second episode of the Hard Questions Only podcast. It is December the 7th. Fortunately, I was not able to get one out over the weekend. But it is what it is. What a week it has been. This election thing continues to rage on. I don't think it will ever fully end. I think when Trump does leave the White House, which I think he will. I think he talks big, but I don't think he'll try to stick around and cause problems and have to be escorted by Secret Service. He wouldn't, purposefully humiliate himself like that. But I think even when he leaves office, there will still be a very large portion of his base who feels that, they didn't get their day, like they were cheated in some way, and they'll feel like it's not over. And there have been some interesting things that have popped up. One of the more interesting ones was this New Yorker cover that was going around, and a lot of right of center and Republicans are railing about it. If you haven't seen it, it is a, I would assume, a person of color, a woman. She has what seems to be a nice blouse on and some, gym shorts on. She's drinking a martini. She's sitting in what seems to be an extremely small room, which is extremely messy. And she's Skyping with someone. She has a couple cats. Her floor is messy. And she seems to be kind of half smiling. It's a caricature, so it's hard to say, but her house is a mess and she's drinking a martini over Skype and she seems to be okay with it. And it seems kind of strange to me. A lot of people were getting way too deep on it, in my opinion. I think the New Yorker was probably just trying to make a commentary about how quarantine life has kind of become the new normal, and people are trying to make the best out of it. Given their varying circumstances, people trying to continue having social contact at a distance in some way or another. And a lot of people, well, I should say a lot of Republicans and right-leaning people, libertarians, etc., took it to mean the New Yorker was trying to normalize what's going on right now. And I think that has come up here and there in varied ways. And I think there's a lot of people that have a bad taste in their mouth over that kind of sentiment. The group of people who are saying, this is life now, this is just how things are going to be. And there's people who are like, it shouldn't be this way to begin with, and it's not okay that it is that way right now. And by how things are, I mean the fact that in many states, quarantine is mandatory. The fact that local businesses are slowly or rapidly crumbling, depending on the area in question. And a lot of people are being relegated to their homes, losing jobs, not being able to see their friends and family because of the law, which I can totally understand. I don't, being a libertarian, I don't appreciate the state telling me or anyone else whether or not I can see my family. And obviously some places are a lot worse than others. New York was talking about limits for Thanksgiving on how many people can be in your house, and there was something going around, I'm not sure how truthful it is, about how Governor Newsom in California was making some type of music restriction. You can't play music too loud. I guess that makes people yell at each other and, spew saliva into the air more frequently or with greater volume. I'm kind of glad for some of the sheriff's departments that have stood up against what is, towing the line of authoritarianism, frankly. I mean, you can You can dress it up however you like, but at the end of the day, the government is telling you how to live your life in like pretty considerable detail. In the previous episode, I think I made it pretty clear how I feel about quarantines and masks and all of these kinds of things, which is, they're a good idea. Masks are a good idea. They don't hurt anything. Minimizing social contact doesn't hurt anything. It's not great, but they should be optional. I don't think the government has a place in telling people to do that stuff. I don't think they have the authority. Well, it's not, I think they don't have the authority, but there's going to be people who are afraid to speak up because they think their neighbor is going to call them, some type of awful name because they're not wearing a mask, and that must mean that they want to kill all of their neighbors or, whatever. And it's just obnoxious, and it's really toeing the line. So I'm glad that some people in positions of authority are standing up to that creeping authoritarianism. So yeah, I'm not real sure what to make of the New Yorker cover. It's nah, I don't I'm not a fan of trying to normalize what's going on right now. Having a global pandemic, not normal. The ways in which some people are reacting to it, not commensurate with the relative health hazard. And I personally am kind of annoyed by people who are like, this is just how things have to be. And people who are all for, left-leaning people who are suddenly all for authoritarianism when it agrees with them. I'm not crazy about it. And then something I found interesting was, I'm not sure why it was headline news, but the fact that Biden allegedly fractured his foot or sprained it or something like that while playing with his dog or something. And that was just all over the news for like 3 days, which I thought was kind of strange. And I don't know if that's just the media's attempt to try and humanize him. Like, oh, look at this guy. He's old and he's white and he's extremely establishment. He's just as establishment as Mitch McConnell and Nancy Pelosi. And oh, look, he plays with his dog, so vigorously that he, breaks an ankle or whatever, which was, I thought was kind of annoying. But I guess there's, I don't, I feel like the left is already heavily, coasting on the fact that Biden is, a lot more normal than Trump in most respects. And just, kind of resting on that. So making this go all over the news seems a bit heavy-handed. Most people would agree that Biden's a fair deal more chill. We don't need to have his coolness and relatability shoved in our faces. Like, he's not. The libertarian in me says he's not, an average person. He's not relatable. He's been in DC for 20, 30 plus years. He's a multimillionaire many times over. He's not a normal person. Stop trying to make him that way. There were a couple things that came up from the Daily Beast, which on Twitter their description says independent, which makes me laugh because they had this headline, which I'll paraphrase, which is that there's three strains of GOP and they all suck. So there were things like the quiets, the crazies, and the hostages. Admittedly, I didn't read the article. I know exactly how it's going to go. So I'm not going to bother trying to paraphrase it. But calling the different groups within the GOP strains as though you're referring to a virus or a disease is kind of lame and sickening, no pun intended. And wholesale writing off people within the GOP is sucking, ostensibly because they're either in disagreement with Trump and quiet about it, or they agree with Trump, in which case they're terrible people in their eyes. But wholesale writing off the GOP and Republicans is a bad idea. That's not any way to curry favor. And this is one of those things that seems painfully obvious to me when I see large-scale painting with a broad brush, mainly you're primarily on the part of left-leaning people and liberals when they talk about Republicans and conservatives and libertarians, which is that they're all just one homogenous group of people and they all believe exactly the same things and they all support Trump to the same degree for the same reasons, which is any sane person will tell you that that's not going to be the case. Just as there's just as much variety within the Republican Party as there is within the Democratic Party. I mean, we have Nancy Pelosi and AOC and any other, what's his name? I should know his name because he was my governor. Doug Jones, you know. It's so the there's middle of the roads and extremists and on both sides of the aisle, and it just seems laughable to me and just patently false to say, well, everyone in the Republican Party sucks because they're all supporting Trump in one way or another, allegedly. And that's no way to like find some type of common ground with people. That's supposed to be the whole point of politics, is to state your case, let someone else state theirs, and find somewhere in the middle to meet so that we can all be less unhappy rather than being totally unhappy. And that's calling everyone a strain as though they're a literal disease. That just makes people want to say, fuck you, I opt out. I don't see any way in which someone could get progress that way. And that's why I try my very best to reserve judgment when I find out that someone I know is hard left or hard right. It's like, well, they might be a single issue voter. They might have some other way of looking at things that I've never seen. Maybe they have something to tell me that will change my mind in one direction or the other. Like, I don't know. There's no way to know that about every single person with 100% certainty. That's just literally impossible. It's unreasonable and not a feasible way to look at the world. And yet there seems to be so many people who think that way. And it's not sustainable, and I don't think it will end well, but I guess if, the silent people that are within the Republican Party that, let Trump get away with murder, metaphorical murder. There's also people on the left side who are like, who must be also crazy and terrible because they let far left people get away with some awful things that they say, frequently without punishment or reprimand. I'm tired of people alleging like the badness is only on one side of the aisle. That's almost funny to me. On the bright side of this week, there was the legal House of Representatives voting to decriminalize marijuana, which is cool. I'm here for it. Not necessarily because I want to smoke fat joints, although I probably would if it were legal here in Alabama, but I suspect Alabama will probably be the last state ever to legalize it after maybe Texas. And I'm a proponent for weed in, very, very bland and obvious ways that, it's for the same reasons that everyone else is for it. What's further interesting to me is the fact that that got voted on, but somehow this stimulus is still at a standstill, and I see people blaming Pelosi and a lot of people blaming McConnell because he won't even let it come to a vote and all this other stuff. But I don't think the next 4 or 6 years will look kindly on Mitch McConnell for these types of reasons. There will be people. Well, it might be hard to say because a lot of Republicans probably, well, not probably, I'm speculating here, I'm grasping, too far, but I don't know how many Republicans are openly, criticizing McConnell because he won't vote on a stimulus package. Because I guess if you're, it would seem to me that if you're going hard for a stimulus package, maybe you're not a Republican anymore, at least not a traditional, fiscal conservative. And I'm not, I don't think the idea of printing more money is great, but right now, from where I'm standing, it seems a heck of a lot better than letting small businesses, which are undoubtedly the backbone of this country, just slowly crumble and wither away till we have nothing left but Amazon and fucking Walmart. That sounds like an awful time. So I think a lot of people will be salty about that in the years to come. And I think they will look to Pelosi and McConnell for that. But they'll both get reelected. Who am I kidding? There was a New York Times article that kind of pissed me off. Let me pull it up here. It looks like the title may have changed, although I could be wrong. Or maybe on Twitter, I was just looking at something else. But the title of this article from New York Times, they posted on Twitter, was "Hidden in Plain Sight: The Ghosts of Segregation. Vestiges of Racism and Oppression, from bricked-over segregated entrances to the forgotten sites of racial violence, still permeate much of America's built environment." And I read some of it. I just perused it very briefly. There's some pictures of like places where protests took place and beatings took place. And a lot of them don't have signs or plaques telling you that something important happened there. Old bathrooms and water fountains that used to say like for colored people only that have been painted over and stuff. And I just thought it was the strangest article. Because I don't like, what are we supposed to do? Were we supposed to tear down every building and every public place that had something bad happen in it? Obviously, segregation is terrible, and all the things that came with Jim Crow were awful. And of course, we should, memorialize these events so that we can learn from them. That's the whole point of studying history, so that we can learn from past mistakes and hopefully not repeat them. But like, what are we supposed to should what should we be doing? Putting a plaque everywhere? Putting, tearing things down completely and in their place, putting monuments? Like, it seems like a very strange point to bring up. Like, did you know something happened here? Well, yeah, of course, the building is 100 years old. Something great probably happened there. Something terrible probably also happened there. Like, it's just probabilistically, something noteworthy happened there at some point. Like, is this imply something about people who live now or people who use those buildings and those public places? Am I a terrible person because I go to a building which used to house a company which was pro-segregation? Like, it's just seems like a strange thing. Should we be renaming things like this bridge that I guess was Edmund Pettus Bridge, named after former Confederate general and KKK leader? Should we rename it? Sure, it can't hurt. Because we shouldn't glorify that person or people like him. It's just such an odd point. It almost seems like here, while you're stuck in your house, your job is slowly eroding away. Here's another thing to feel bad about. While you're depressed watching Netflix in your sweatpants and you haven't shaved in 4 days, hey, guess what? We still got vestiges of racism everywhere. Like, it's just, I feel like they didn't read the room very well. Well, they actually have the whole article. They're not going to make me pay for it. What do you know? All right, so I've browsed through it, and of course, they make a segue into how, structural, what's the term that's getting used now? Not structural racism, systematic racism, is that what it is? It's skipping me, it's skipping me, it's escaping me. Institutional racism, there we go. It segues into that and how, quote, "These photographs are a testament to the endurance of racial inequalities that have plagued American society projected backward and forward in time. Then it talks about the deaths of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and it ends with, quote, "And these pictures prove that if you look carefully enough, you'll find that evidence of the structures of segregation and the marks of white supremacy still surround us, embedded in the landscape of our day-to-day lives." Like, are we just still just talking about physical buildings and sites? Are we now alluding to institutional racism? That seems pretty thinly veiled. That's what it looks like. Yeah, but it's still kind of a strange article. Yeah, I wasn't sure what to make of that, but it seemed very odd and, like, kind of random. And then I believe there was another article from Daily Beast. I didn't read it. I just saw the headline, and the headline kind of made me think. And it said, "How will history remember the Trump era?" And I thought that was interesting, and I thought it was kind of provoking, thought-provoking for a bit. And then I was just like, well, it's going to depend on who you ask. I mean, are we just talking about what a ninth grader is going to find in their history book in 30 years? If that's the case, it's probably not going to look very well. You know, history is not going to smile upon the memory of Donald Trump. Can you reasonably relegate someone's presidency to a paragraph? No. Probably not even a couple pages. Like, there's 4 years is a lot of time for things to happen, regardless of which president you're talking about. Perhaps especially Trump, but literally any president. Like, who's the most boring president? Calvin Coolidge? I don't know. There's still a lot to be said. And the idea that you could boil down someone's presidency to, like, some snippets seems kind of unreasonable. And obviously, I know exactly what the Daily Beast is going to say about it, because I think the GOP is seems to think the GOP is a disease, and everyone in it's crazy. But this goes back to the fact that the left can't seem to grasp the fact that people support Trump, have supported Trump, and continue to support Trump for different reasons. I know people in my personal life who do not like Trump as a person. They think he is immodest. They think he's rude. They think he's a jerk. They would not be friends with Trump in real life. However, they're a fan of his policy and his, you know, foreign policy, and, you know, his take on economics and boosting the economy and all these kinds of things. And I know people who just like him because he's, you know, he's been a disruptor nonstop for 4 years. Like, there's room for very, very different people in the Trump camp. And, you know, there's no shortage of people who are saying, well, I don't care why you support Trump, but if you support Trump, you're a shitty person. Because supporting him for one thing implies that you condone all of his other behavior, which isn't necessarily true. I mean, it's true insofar as a vote is a vote is a vote. But it is not illogical for me to say I support Trump's foreign policy, and that's my single voter issue, and I also think he's personally an asshole. That's not illogical. There's no cognitive dissonance associated with making that statement. And there are a lot of people who make that statement. Vaccines rolling out, it looks like people like me will be the very last to get it, which I'm not going to complain about because, you know, I want the vaccine to work out. Like, I'm not going to be conspiratorial and say, well, maybe it's going to make everybody sick. And you know, there's a lot of conspiratorial people talking about how there are laws that absolve vaccine manufacturers of liability or guilt if a vaccine has bad side effects and it starts hurting or killing people. That would be extremely unfortunate, and I would never, ever want that to happen. But like I said in the previous episode, I don't think that's an unreasonable fear, especially when you take an extremely complex thing like creating a medicine of any kind, much less a vaccine. Like, when you seriously speed that up, like, people are going to be reasonably concerned. And again, I don't think the distinction is being made between those two groups of people and on the right. It seems to me that a lot of Democrats just see people who are hesitant about vaccines as a, again, a homogenous group. They're all against it, so they must be wholly anti-vaxxers, and they must want everybody's grandmothers to die a slow, painful death alone in a hospital room. Well, no, of course not. But if it were any other circumstance, people on both sides would be extremely hesitant about something that was rushed. Now you can make, perhaps there's some evidence to show that the FDA cut red tape and all of other stuff that usually speeds up vaccines, which makes them take sometimes a decade. So that doesn't have to take quite that long. But at the end of the day, you still don't have the data to show long-term effects. Again, it seems like no room is being made, I guess, for people who, well, ultimately just it comes back to nuance, the fight for nuance, which has been a thing for a few years now about how leftists and Democrats, usually further leaning Democrats and liberals, they don't have time or patience for nuance. If you subscribe to one thing that Trump has said in 4 years, well, then you wholesale co-sign on whatever Trump has to say or does in the future. Which is like all of those people who initially voted for Trump and were forever condemned because they had no idea that his presidency would turn out the way that it has. There's no shortage of people who are disappointed in that. There are, I think, probably a lot of people who are very hopeful in what might have become of the last 4 years for one reason or another. But again, remorse is not enough. You have to be guilt-free from the beginning of time, which nobody is. It's like canceling people for something stupid they said on Twitter 5 years ago. Like, how many times has that happened now that someone's gotten fired because of something dumb they said forever ago? Like, are people not allowed to like be wrong and apologize? Because eventually there's not going to be anyone pure enough left. But I feel like that's probably a conversation for another time. But I think the next episode will be more of like a 10,000 foot view of some things going on and have been going on basically since the advent of the 24-hour news cycle, but I don't want to spoil that right now. So I guess we'll probably call this episode good here. So thanks for listening. If you made it this far, I really appreciate it. If you want to reach out or you're interested in any of my other work, I have a website, thomasegmon.com, EDGEMON.com, or I'm on Twitter at Leibniz was first, LeibNiz was first. Thanks, and we'll see you next week.